All right. Jeff Steyer. Happy New Year to my friend Jeff Steyer, who's on the phone with the Consumer Choice Center. How have you been?
Fantastic. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year. And Consumer Choice Center, you just announced that you had moved over to the Consumer Choice Center.
Today,
in fact. So what are you hoping to do in your new capacity at your new place?
Well, the Consumer Choice Center and I share a mission, which is to call for the combination of both reasonable regulation and choice. All too often, regulators see the risks and want to regulate away, but they don't see the cost. They don't see the unintended consequences of regulation. And consumers need a voice, and I'm going to be that voice.
All right, so food safety is a reasonable regulation, but trying to figure out a way to ban specific foods is not a reasonable regulation because one actually enhances choice and the other one doesn't.
Yeah, we think that in almost every case, individuals know better than the government. I know that's a crazy concept, and we think consumers should make those choices. They should have access to information. Consumers know best.
Well,
And the critics always say, Vicki, that, well, this is dangerous or that's bad for you. Are you against that? And in a piece in the New York Times just last week on the Center for Science and the Public Interest, when their head, Michael Jacobson, announced his retirement, he said that the people on the right just want to live in a world with no regulation. And we want regulation because we believe in public health. And it's just all wrong. You can have both. The left does not have a monopoly on what's in the interest of public health. There is a free market approach, and that's what I'm going to advocate for against the paternalistic forces that want to take away choice and ignore facts, ignore science, and just say public health and children.
I was looking at a picture from somebody posted up from a Costco. I can't remember where this was. Was it Oregon or Seattle?
It
was in Seattle. There's a soda tax. And mind you, I go to the Costco and I stock up on my soda because it's so cheap there. And it's really cheap. I think it was a picture of a Gatorade display. And it was like $10 for the Gatorade or something like that, or $14 for the Gatorade. And then $10.50 for the tax.
And kudos to Costco
for posting the actual tax.
Yeah, Walter Olson at the Cato Institute did a great job writing that up today.
That's how nutty it is. So does that mean that people are going to somehow be healthier because they're not drinking Gatorade? No, that's nonsense. It's just that people are going to expend more money to buy products they were already consuming safely as it is.
Either that, or they will go to a different Costco nearby. As Costco told their consumers, you can go outside of the city limits and get this without that tax. And the left wants to have it both ways and will say this tax works, and then they'll say that people, you know, it's too small for people to really worry about it, and they're not going to go out of their way to get it somewhere else. But in fact, they're doing that, and the facts don't seem to matter. As long as you say we're here to protect public health. And that's a great example that you bring up of the soda tax, where it has to be a really high tax for it to work, for actually it to affect people's consumption. But if it's too high, then people will go elsewhere. And it's just a case of the government saying it knows what's best. In Philadelphia last year when they passed the soda tax there, they were at least partially honest and said it's only to raise revenue, not to improve public health.
Well, that's actually more honest, but because it's not improving public health. We don't have any data that these types of taxes are improving public health. So why does people like Michael Jacobson at Center for Science and the Public Interest, which is nothing more than an advocacy, a left-leaning anti-corporate advocacy group, it's not about science. Why do they pretend otherwise? They either just simply think that the government ought to be making everybody's choices for individual consumers, or it's all about revenue. And yet you're not hearing many people be honest about that. We hate choice. We want to take away your choice. Bernie Sanders says he doesn't like choice. People have too many choices in deodorants. People have too many choices, he says. At least he's honest about it. And occasionally you'll get seepage of honesty like you saw in Philadelphia. But generally these folks are saying it's for science. It's going to make you better. No evidence, none whatsoever. And it seems like the left doesn't think it ever has to provide that evidence. They just have to provide the assertions and claim they're for something positive.
That's exactly right. And that's what I'll be doing at the Consumer Choice Center is helping consumers speak out on these issues and representing them on them.
And what you need as well, unfortunately, is that because there's so many different attacks. So there'll be attack on pizza or attack on trans fats or an attack on soda or an attack on e-cigarettes or whatever it might be. You have now splintered all the constituencies. What you need is a voice like yours to speak on behalf of consumers generally and be familiar enough with each of these issues to be able to speak intelligently about the lack of data that has been used to generate these regulations in the first place. E-cigarettes is a classic. For a while, there was almost no constituency for this product at all. And I mean, by that, I mean advocacy constituency. We were too, splintered, individual smokers choosing individual products to improve their health themselves. We're not exactly an easily organized group. Now there's a larger constituency of that with companies like Philip Morris looking to invest in the technology. But still, you've still got the regulations looming on the horizon and threats to shut down this particular product, all because the government's decided without science that it thinks it knows best.
And that's exactly right. And this issue in particular is an interesting one because people's lives are at stake and people have organized. Going back to your earlier point about consumers not organizing and not engaging because it's this and it's that, it's pizza, it's soda, it's everything. A few years, probably a decade ago, they did ban a flame retardant that was used on things like couches, and they claimed some very remote risk. And when I challenged them on it and said, look, the science says this is really not a problem, and they said, well, it's only going to cost consumers, say on a couch, $3 more for a couch to use a more expensive flame retardant. And that was exactly the point. Consumers, when they're faced with a $3 cost for couches that you only buy maybe once a decade or whatever it may be, you're not going to organize, you're not going to speak out, you're not going to send a letter, you're not going to go testify. But every day there are attacks like that, and what we're doing at the Consumer Choice Center is bringing together all of those issues and speaking out on behalf of consumers who aren't going to speak out, say, on the ban on flame retardants to raise their cost of a couch $3 and speak out for them. Happily, we're able to work with lots of consumers on the issue of harm reduction, on using e-cigarettes, heat-not-burn products, lower risk ways of getting nicotine that are satisfying and help people quit smoking. We're able to work with consumers on that issue because it's not $3, it's life and death.
It is. And it's not even $3, even if you don't look at it as life and death. It's hundreds of dollars a month.
Yeah.
You're not talking $3. You're talking about potentially saving hundreds of dollars a month. I've often told the story where when I switched to e-cigarettes, I was spending between $280 and $310 a month. And I went to about $40. And that was me, sort of overspending to test different types of, of the new technology. But a dramatic saving. So to say you're not allowed to have that product. What is the status of the FDA regulation now that there's been sort of a pause and we're going to take a look at this? But some people, particularly vape shop owners, are still a little bit concerned. That said, I think it's probably positive news that Philip Morris is talking about investing even more broadly in the technology.
Exactly. I think that's what consumers need is more technology, more advances, a wider range of products, more satisfying products if the one you're using now is not enough. The FDA is still a major threat. The FDA, in fact, is in the process of developing a rule to consider the effect of flavors. I don't think they're interested in so much in whether flavors are helping people quit smoking flavors of e-cigarettes, but rather they're concerned about the risk that flavors will attract kids, and therefore maybe we should just regulate e-cigarettes and ban flavors or certain flavors. They're starting to go through that rulemaking process now. The FDA did not let up, as many people think, on e-cigarettes. They did postpone a deadline, but it's still stifling innovation. The word is still out there that e-cigarettes are risky products, and the left is still attacking them. We need to do more to get the FDA to recognize the benefits of these products. At the end of this month, the FDA is holding a hearing, their Tobacco Product Scientific Advisory Committee, just outside of Washington, to evaluate a product that's not available in the U.S. right now because of the tobacco control laws that are in effect. But there is a pathway, and that product is called IQOS. It is a Philip Morris product. It's not sold here because it's not allowed to be sold here because it hasn't gone through the process yet. BAT, Reynolds, they have similar products, different but same idea, where the tobacco where unlike an e-cigarette where it's a liquid, it is a actual tobacco product, but it is so much less risky because the product is heated to create a vapor. It gives you the flavor of the tobacco because it is tobacco, unlike e-cigarettes, which actually don't have any tobacco. The IQOS and other heat-not-burn products, they're actually tobacco products, but they're non-combustible. They're heated to give you the nicotine and the flavor. Are they zero risk? I would say no. They're dramatically less risky than e-cigarettes. Some people are saying, well, what do you need this for? You already have e-cigarettes. Well, they don't understand why people smoke, how to help people quit smoking. The idea being that we want lots of choices for lots of different smokers to give everyone the opportunity to choose for themselves a product that has less risk than the current combustible products. And the FDA has said at the end of July, they made an announcement that we're going to look at nicotine and recognize that nicotine is at the heart of the problem and people become addicted to smoking from nicotine, but it is not the dangerous product that people get from tobacco. The danger is the combustion. And if the FDA is true to its word, it will act quickly to approve this modified risk tobacco product application, as it's called, and say, yes, IQOS, which heats tobacco, modifies risk. It lowers risk, and it's less harmful to public health, to the individual, and to the population as a whole, if you're not combusting the tobacco. And the real question is whether the FDA will act quickly and approve this product. In Japan, the product is on the market, and the numbers are unbelievable. The uptake of this new product, people who use it are not kids. They're adult smokers who are lowering their risk, and I think that's good news. I want more. I want more lower-risk products with a range of choices so consumers and make their own decisions.
And consumers can make their own decisions. They're actually capable of making their own decisions. This is a new something that I had just heard about because I was reading some of the stuff you had posted about it. I didn't even know about this product, this brand new heat not burn product. But again, it is about getting stupidity and bureaucratic interest. And quite frankly, in some cases, you know, some groups and companies benefit from high levels and high hurdles in regulation. And getting those taken down, I'm hopeful that with a guy like Trump, who seems to be interested in deregulation, at the very least, benign neglect of regulation, that maybe we can get some of this mess out of the way, because it is impacting everything from food to harm reduction products, like we were just talking about, to good innovation. And even if it's not good innovation, if people want it and they can manage their own risks, Jeff, they can manage their own risks just fine. The government is not going to save anybody from themselves with a regulation. That will never happen.
That's why we need markets. The market will decide. If consumers want lower risk products, they can choose them. And right now they can't make that choice about an IQOS, at least. But you're absolutely right. We need a range of products for different people. A lot of people in the e-cigarette community are very concerned about IQOS. And my view is, if e-cigarettes work for you, great. But if they don't work for you, what about those people? And what about their choice?
Yeah, exactly. I don't. Why are they concerned? Are they afraid that they're going to have a little bit less variety for themselves? I'm not worried.
They'll still have that variety. They should still have their variety.
It seems like every new innovation, every new incarnation of these products gets more interesting and better. I'm for more choice. I'm for more choices for myself and for everybody else as well. But it all begins by, you know, having someone stand on behalf of a massive constituency of consumers first. And you put the consumers first, and you know what? Smart choices are going to fall in line after that. It's good to have you on the program, though, Jeff. And congratulations on the new gig, Consumer Choice
Thanks,
Center,
Vicky.
Jeff Steyer. And you can follow Jeff online, and or rather on Twitter, at Jeff A. Steyer, at Jeff A. Steyer, STIER. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Vicky. Happy New Year.
You too. We'll be right back.